defense has really struggled throughout the course of this season, even dating back to last season at times. I mean, I think they were able to overcome some of their defensive inefficiencies because of the way the offense came to life late last season, and they went on that winning streak and were able to win the division and get into the playoffs. But I agree with you. I think there's going to be a lot of changes for both of these teams. There's also going to be changes for the Cowboys and the Eagles, because no matter who wins this division, John, it's been a down year for the NFC East. I think a lot of teams went below expectations, especially the Dallas Cowboys, the Philadelphia Eagles, who got off to, remember, a red-hot start and then faded late and then all of a sudden regrouped. So it's been a very up-and-down year for this division.
Yeah, I don't think many people would have thought the Eagles, though, would have came out and won this division. To me, they were the team before the year that most people thought was probably least likely to come out and win the NFC East this year. So I think they probably outperformed expectations. But the Giants certainly underperformed, and I think the Redskins certainly have underperformed heading into this game. Division winners last year. Now, if they lose, they're likely going to have the first overall pick in the NFL draft, which is going to go to St. Louis because of the Robert Griffin III trade. So a very disappointing step-back year for the Redskins. And I think it really goes back to Robert Griffin III not being healthy to start the year. He missed most of the offseason with that knee injury. And I think that set the franchise back a lot. And they're going to have to make a decision now after the year. You got to assume they're going to stick with Robert Griffin III based on what he did last season. Do they look to move Kirk Cousins? What do they decide to do here moving forward? I think it'll be interesting. As for the Giants, they have a lot of evaluation to do in this final game as they move forward, Lance. We mentioned nearly 30 unrestricted free agents coming up in the offseason. They'll have a lot of very tough decisions to make in terms of what they're going to do with a lot of these guys. And they've played well on defense, and you'd like to see the offense, I think, give a bit of a spark. And one of the spots you can really watch this week, to me, is wide receiver. How does Jerrell Jernigan do for a third consecutive game where he'll get significant playing time? And then we'll see if Reuben Randle can fight through an injury, and if he can give you something, it'll be the last chance for Akeem Nicks to show the NFL that he deserves a big contract, something he certainly has had trouble doing this year.
Also an opportunity for Akeem Nicks to get in the end zone, as he still has the most receptions, targets, and receiving yards of any other receiver in the NFL without a touchdown. So I think he would definitely like to end that drought. You have to go back to the Saints game back in last season to see when the last time he got into the end zone. So it's been a very lengthy period of time. Correct. Lewis Murphy could also get extended reps if Reuben Randle can't go because he's dealing with some swelling in the knee. So we could see a very different look with respect to this receiving core this weekend against a Redskins secondary that clearly has struggled over the course of this season.
Yeah, no doubt about it. They've struggled getting to the quarterback. For the most part, they're in the middle league in terms of sacks. And besides D'Angelo Hall, their entire secondary has struggled. Merriweather's had some big hits, but he hasn't been great. Wilson, who plays in the slot and plays opposite.
Terrible.
D'Angelo Hall has been one of the worst corners in football this year. They haven't been able to find the second safety. They've rotated between Dowdy and Rambo and a couple other guys back there. No one's really seized the job. So really, this should be, we've said this a bajillion times this year, I know, but it should be an opportunity for the Giants to get some man-on-man coverage outside, and let's see what these guys can do.
Well, they did take advantage of a weak Lions secondary last week. They didn't necessarily explode from an offensive standpoint, but wide receivers won their individual battles and made plays when the opportunities presented themselves. So, it could very well duplicate itself again this week. David Amerson is another young corner that they have in the mix there, a second-round pick from last year's draft, so he also fills in at times, and they use him in the mix when they bring him in. They move Wilson into the slot, and that's why Wilson has struggled so much, because he's been outmatched 99% of the time with the wide receiver that he's gotten a look at. So, I think there's going to be opportunities to be made regardless of who's catching the football from Eli Manning, and it's all about momentum. You just want to take away something in this final game, and if you're a player that's going to be a free agent and you're going to have an opportunity to test the market, once again, it's another opportunity to audition and make a statement to other teams if you don't return to this organization.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And it's funny, the Redskins, you mentioned momentum, they're terrible to start off games this year. If you take a look at some of their numbers,
Lance, they were pretty good, though, in the first matchup against the Giants.
They were. They've allowed 126 first-quarter points this year. That's most in the NFL, an average of 8 per game. They've been outscored by 5 points per first quarter. That's the worst differential in the NFL. In terms of halves, they've given up 152 first-half points this year and have trailed by an average of 7 points at halftime. So the Giants should be able to get out to a quick start here and not put Eli Manning and this passing attack were just banged up, we mentioned it, in a position where you have to throw the ball a ton in order to make some type of comeback in half number two.
Well, the other thing is they can't close out games, so that's why I would feel good if you're the Giants. Even if they come out to a strong lead at the early stages, which they did in the first meeting, it's very hard for them to put that exclamation point down.
Yeah, you mentioned the Redskins in the fourth quarter. Good segue. They're 12 of their 15 games this year, they've been within one score in the fourth quarter. So they've played a lot of close games. They have 13 fourth quarter giveaways, fourth most in the NFL. Only 5 sacks in the fourth quarter. That's second fewest in the NFL. They've allowed 13 sacks in the fourth quarter, which is the sixth most. And in their last 4 games in the fourth quarter, they've been outscored 30-9 in that fourth quarter. So they've had all sorts of problems.
And that's a big reason why they're 2-7 in games decided by 8 points or less, including back-to-back 1-point losses. They had a 9-point lead against the Cowboys last week, and they easily let that slip away.
201-939-4513. We could touch on anything in the New York Giants. You want to talk about the game, future, et cetera, et cetera. You can do it on the phones. We're going to start with Gedalia in New Jersey. Gedalia, good morning. Gedalia, you there, pal? Put him back on hold, Ash, and we'll go back to him. Let's go to Drew in Virginia. Drew, what's going on?
Hey, good morning, guys. How you doing, man?
What's up, Drew? How are you?
Drew?
Good, man. Great holiday. Good on Christmas. Hey, I was listening to Monday's show, and you guys was talking about MVP, you know, the team and everything. I'm kind of focused on defense because offense, I'm kind of, a little lost. But for me, I know a lot of people are kind of hesitant of giving Bees in the MVP, for the team's, turnaround, short period turnaround.
I wouldn't, Drew, but some people have.
Well, this is the reason why I'm talking about Bees, because I kind of noticed this too. First and foremost, let's not forget the Giants had that 6-game losing streak, when they finally picked up Beason, and he came in and he gave us an immediate impact. But to me, the biggest thing, and all of the other teammates were talking about it too, man, is the leadership that he brought in there. He came in there and he started talking to those guys and he kind of whipped them into shape and everything. And then the Giants went on, that little short winning streak.
Yeah, but Drew, I hear you and I know what you're saying. But was it John Beeson's arrival that put him on that winning streak? Or was it the fact they got to play Josh Freeman, Matt Barkley, Terrell Pryor on one leg, Scott Tolzien for 4 straight games?
Well, I mean, I'll give you that, and I understand that and everything, okay? And these guys play some horrendous teams to get on the winning streak that they got on, and it's obviously the teams that they played that allowed them to win, because it's been noted and it's been proven that, when they played a good team, they lost. I get all of that. But still, when you talk to a lot of those guys, and we've all listened to the shows and everything, a lot of those guys was talking about Beeson's leadership.
Right.
And so that's what I'm looking at. I mean, did the Giants improve overall? Obviously not. And, as I predicted earlier this year, they're going to obviously finish under 500. But still, he brought at least a leadership there and a voice there, which kind of helped out Antrell Roe. For me, I love Antrell Roe in terms of his leadership and his passion. I'm a huge fan of that. And, I think Beeson came in there and he brought a little bit of that, and it kind of validated some of the things that Roe was trying to say. Now, obviously he couldn't improve, the overall performance of the team. But to me, that's how I look at it. So, yeah, for me, it's Beeson, and not necessarily for any physical skills he brought to the team, but for me, the leadership role, that's what I'm looking at from the standpoint of leadership role.
All right, Drew, thanks for the call, bud.
Let me say one more thing, man.
Go ahead.
Sorry.
No, that's all right. No worries.
Okay. Again, I was listening to the show Monday, and I think somebody was talking about, can we pick up some defensive players or whatever. Look, man, for me, I don't want to hear nothing but offense. And if we pick up anything outside of offense, in the first round or whatever, man, to me, somebody need to be fired. You know, as horrendous as Eli has been, and he has been, you know, but I'm a huge fan, and I'm going to defend Eli. I don't care what quarterback you put behind that offensive line. He is not going to have a successful season, not with the line we have had.
Now, Drew, okay. I hear you, but what happens when you select in that first round if a talent worthy of that draft pick isn't there, and there's a shutdown, lockdown corner on the board that is a much higher grade than any offensive lineman? I would much rather pick that corner to play across some Prince, which is a need on this team, or even a pass rusher to help out this defensive line if he's a much better player than the offensive lineman that's on the board at that time.
You know, I understand that, okay, to a certain extent. I understand that. And, you know, I mean, you know, if I had the answer, I would be running the Giants. So I understand that. But, again, there is no doubt in anybody's mind we need to look at offense. I said this before, okay. You know, this team has a lot of holes in it. We've already discussed that. It has a lot of holes. We need offense. We need defense. We need players all over the place. To me, you build a strong offensive line. Why? Because at least they can put up some points on the board to keep your defense rested in a little bit, and they can keep that going a little bit. So, you know, I go back to, like, what the Colts always did with Peyton. The Colts didn't always have the greatest defensive line, okay, defense in the world, but they had that offense that could score points and keep defenses, rest their defense. And I think that's what the Giants need to do. We need to get the offensive line repaired first and then start going after other pieces. I agree the defense needs some pieces too, but I think the defense will play a lot better if they can rest, if they're not on the field 40 minutes a game.
Now, Drew, and you're right. I think that's fair. And look, the offense, Lance, no doubt about it. And Drew, thanks a lot for the call, man. We appreciate it. Always glad you had a good Christmas and have a happy New Year. Always good to hear from you. The offense has to be number one priority here, obviously. But let's see what they do in free agency first, too, before we decide who they want to draft.
Of course. You have to see what they get on the market before they determine where they want to go in the draft. I mean, Drew right now is saying offensive line is top priority. I agree with him. But if they bring in two offensive linemen in free agency, maybe you don't necessarily need to draft in the first two rounds an offensive lineman. You could wait till round three. So it's very premature to determine what position they need to hone in on in those early rounds. I think free agency is going to come first. Let's see what the Giants do. Let's see what their plan of attack is via free agency, and then that will set the tone for the draft, because the draft is utilized to fill in the other voids and holes that you still have after free agency.
201-939-4513. Gedalia's in New Jersey. Gedalia, what's going on?
Good. How are you?
How are you?
Good. I have a question. I want to know what's the score with the running back position after this season.
Well, right now, Andre Brown's going to be a free agent. I think the Giants will probably effort to bring him back. David Wilson, we'll see if he can return from that neck injury. I'm sure he'll get a lot of evaluation from the doctors in the offseason. But, Lance, I think we're both in agreement. They need to bring in a running back here with a little bit of experience that they can rely on if some of these guys maybe can't go.
Well, Andre Brown has a track record of getting hurt, so you can't go into this season thinking that he's going to be the guy that's going to be able to last 16 games. Plus, he's a free agent. Brandon Jacobs is a free agent. Peyton Hillis is a free agent. Michael Cox really is the only one under contract heading into next season other than David Wilson, but David Wilson's still a question mark, as you noted, with the injury. So they're going to need to bring in a running back no matter how you look at it, but I would agree. I think there is youth here already, John, so you don't need to necessarily bring in more inexperience. You need to bring in a ground and pounder, as I like to call him, who can really establish himself around the red zone.
What about fumbling issues?
I'm sorry, say that again?
What about the fumbling issues?
Oh, with David Wilson you're talking about?
Yes.
Well, I mean, the first thing they got to worry about David Wilson is the health. Once he gets back on the field, you can start worrying about that other stuff. I mean, look, they're coaching him up. They're trying to get him to fix that problem. After that first game, he did protect the ball a lot better this year. But, look, it is an issue looking forward. And, Gadai, thanks for the call. We appreciate it. And, look, it's something that has to get fixed, and Tom Coughlin won't stand for turning the ball over. We get that. But let's get him back on the field first before you start worrying about his fumbling.
Yeah, you got to get him back on the field. I mean, he can't hold on to the football, or it doesn't matter if he holds on to the football if he's on the sideline. At this point, they need to get him healthy, and I still think that's a huge question mark heading into this offseason and next season. So he's really right now not in the conversation until they can take the necessary steps to determine whether or not he can be a contributor.
But that fumbling issue is one of the reasons you want to bring in a veteran that you can rely on, either if he's ineffective or he's hurt.
Well, no matter who you bring in, whether it's a young running back or a veteran running back, they've got to be able to hold on to the football. I think Tom Coughlin would tell you that 10 million different times. He's not bringing in a running back that's going to cough up the football, because the last thing this team can afford to do heading into next season is have their turnover rate be as high as it was heading into this year.
Hey, look, and you look at some of the points allowed the defense has given up this year, and a lot of those points allowed have to do with either defensive scores, special team scores, or the defense being put into bad field position situations. So, you know, certainly those stats for the defense are probably better than what they look like on paper. And part of that's to do with turnovers. And Lance, if you look at any one thing that can describe why the Giants are so bad this year, it's because of their turnover ratio. It's the worst in football. It's terrible. And they have more giveaways than anybody. And that's the reason they're in the predicament they're in. Too many turnovers.
Minus 16. You're not going to win. You look at the teams that improved from last season to this season, I guarantee you their turnover differential basically has pulled to 180. The Eagles, probably the best example. Philadelphia couldn't hold on to the football last season. They could hold on to the football this year.
The Redskins is the opposite. Last year they held on to the football. This year, I believe they're third in terms of giveaways. So, you know, it goes back and forth in terms of record. It's really a direct correlation. If you want a chart, if you want to make one chart in the NFL that gauges whether or not a team wins football games, just chart their turnover differential. That's all you have to do.
Plus 17 in 2012, minus 7 this year for the Redskins.
24 difference.
30 giveaways.
It's a lot of giveaways.
They're at the bottom of the rankings just like the Giants, and you mentioned all the touchdowns that the Giants gave up via special teams and defense, what they call miscellaneous touchdowns.
What are they, 7 Washington?
9. 9 the Giants surrendered. I'm talking about the Giants.
I think Washington is 7. I actually got that today. Hold on.
Washington has given up a lot. I know, though, they have scored a lot, too. They have 5 defensive touchdowns themselves.
Washington has allowed 7 return touchdowns this year, 3 punt returns, 1 kickoff return. And by the way, the all-time NFL record for punt and kickoff returns given up in a year for touchdowns is 5. By the 94 Rams and 98 Vikings. That's NFL history, mind you. So the Redskins just one away from tying that. The Redskins have also given up 2 interception return for touchdowns and a blocked punt return for a touchdown. That's 7. They've had the same issues the Giants have had.
And you can't afford to give that up when your defense is struggling and your offense is struggling. Because remember, RG3 was never healthy at any point of this season. He was a shell of himself based on his rookie campaign. You put yourself behind time and time again, you're going to have to play catch-up. And how many teams survive playing catch-up?
I have a great nugget for you. I'm debating whether I want to use it today or if I should save it for Sunday. What do you think? I don't think I might not get to it on Sunday. So I kind of
well, that's
give
why
it to you
it's
now.
Probably worthy of throwing it out now. Or unless you want to save it for Big Blue Hits later.
Now, when you hear about Kirk Cousins, what do you think about when you think about Kirk Cousins? What is he good at? What type of quarterback is he?
He's a pocket passer who can throw the ball down the field.
Right. In his career, in the pocket, Kirk Cousins is 83 or 44. That's 58%. 3 touchdowns, 8 interceptions. And a 62.5 quarterback rating. Out of the pocket, 15 of 20, 5 touchdowns, 0 interceptions, wow. 142 quarterback rating outside the pocket.
Would have never thought that. You would have thought that may have been RG3's numbers.
I know. I thought it was fascinating when I found
that
out.
That is impressive. Morning. So he's not that bad when he roams out of the pocket.
Excellent when he's out of the pocket. Granted, the sample size is obviously very small, only 20 attempts as compared to 144, but maybe you only have to read half the field, less, you know, apt to make some mistakes and force the ball in there. It's easier to throw it away since, you know, you can't get called for intentional ground and you're outside the pocket. I thought that was very interesting that he's much better on the move than some people probably give him credit for.
And that's surprising considering how bad this offensive line has been, John, for the course of the season for the Redskins.
No better recently.
Correct. Just 1 sack in the last 2 games. But overall, they have not done a good job protecting whether it be RG3 or even Kirk Cousins dating back to last season.
No question about it. 201-939-4513. Back to our phones. Let's go to David in Connecticut next. David, what's going on?
Hi, guys. How are you?
What's up, Dave?
First of all, I want to thank you guys for the show. Actually, I recently moved to North Carolina, and this has been one of the chances to stay current and connected to the team. So I really want to thank you guys.
Nice.
for the show, for the content. It's excellent.
Thank you for listening and watching, Dan.
Still around.
We appreciate it. Thank you.
So I have two questions for you guys. I'll take the answers in succession. But
sure.
The first question is Linville Joseph. I hear a lot of talk about the fact that there's no way the Giants are going to bring him back. I understand for a long-term contract it would be a tough move to make. But I'm curious as to why the defensive tackle position, they wouldn't consider franchising him as the I believe defensive tackle salaries are more in line as opposed to like a pass rusher salary. So that's the first question.
If you franchise Joseph, what do you think? That'll be in like the $7 million range, $8 million for the average of the top 10 salary, something like that? And look, I think it's a possibility. I get it. But, and this is why I say but, the Giants have so many needs this offseason, and they only have a limited amount of money they're going to be able to spend. And they believe they have in-house a replacement that's ready to replace Linval Joseph and Jonathan Hankins. They have another guy, Marcus Kuhn, they think can step in and play right away. They believe they can bring back Mike Patterson on the cheap, and you know he can be an effective rotation guy, a defensive tackle, and obviously Colin Jenkins still under contract. So look, they really like Linval Joseph, and in the perfect world, they'd pay him and they'd bring him back, and they'd be happy to have him here. I just think based on the salary cap situation and based on the other talent already on the roster and the fact that it's probably a position of strength, I think that's why they have to choose to let him go if he gets a big contract otherwise.
And, David, just to add to what John mentioned, Henry Melton, who was the Bears' defensive tackle coming into this season, was given the franchise tag. It was just under $9
million. Oh, wow. It was as much as 9,
8.9.
Huh?
Oh, wow. So I think that the Giants would probably think twice about giving Linval Joseph that type of money. Just to put things in perspective, that doesn't mean that Joseph would get that, but that's the type of money you're looking at if you franchise a defensive tackle.
Okay, I just have a second question for
you
guys. This is more of a hypothetical question, but going into this season, I think it was obvious to the common fan that the Giants had taken a lot of gambles with the roster. And looking back in hindsight at the running back position, bringing in Andre Brown, who can't play a full season, and even in college had an injury history, and David Wilson, who's more of a speed type player, like a Reggie Bush type player, as your every down backs.
Right.
Big gamble. The offensive line, Chris Mees, had a pretty major surgery, and Bass has been injured for the better part of 2 years. These are pretty big gambles that were taken with the roster. They obviously didn't work out. I think Reese alluded to it in a press conference. Sometimes they work out, sometimes they don't. So just in your opinion, behind closed doors, I think it's obvious Reese is going to be back. What do you – like, the amount of freedom that is given to the constitution of that roster and the emphasis of that level of risk-taking, what are your thoughts on how much you think behind closed doors ownership is going to exert their influence on things like that type of risk-taking?
Well, David, I think in some ways some of those things are risks. Other things, they're not. I mean, they really – reduced Chris Knee's salary cap hit this year. They had him renegotiate his contract, I believe, on two or three separate occasions. David Boss was still in the contract. They had to keep him around. So, and other risks are necessitated by the fact that they didn't have a lot of salary cap space. So you don't have a lot of money to spend, and quite frankly, you've been drafted well enough to get a lot of replacements ready. You have to roll the dice on guys. Like you mentioned a Chris Knee coming off of surgery. Like a Terrell Thomas coming off of 3 knee surgeries. That risk is one that happened to work out, I think, this year, and he's played well enough where that risk has worked out. Will Hill, I think, was a calculated risk based on his suspension and such. And after he came back, he's been a big success. So I think that risk is one of the ones that's paid off. So I don't think the ownership is going to step in and start micromanaging the roster. The way this organization works, the Maras, the Tishes, they will allow the general manager to do his job, and you hope they won't have to take quite as many risks this season because they're in a much better spot in terms of the salary cap, and you hope that they draft well in May, and you bring in some extra young players here to provide some depth.
Okay, thanks a lot, guys. Have a great holiday season.
All right, you too, David. Thanks so much. And just to piggyback off of what you said, John, I would say those are all low risks because those guys are not really making big-time money. So it's not as if you're breaking open the piggy bank to keep those guys around.
Correct, but it's risky to the point where you're dedicating or you're assuming you're going to have a starter out of those guys when, based on injury history,
true,
maybe you can't depend on it. And running back was another position
bringing
where they
back
ran,
Brandon Jacobs too,
where they ran a big risk, where David Wilson had never done it. You wanted to give him the full-time job, and like you mentioned, Andre Brown's always hurt. So there was a big element in risk of risk in terms of the running back position this year too, because you didn't have that stable every down veteran back that you know you could lean on if Brown or Wilson go down or are unreliable.
However, the one thing that all of those players had in common, at least, was familiarity with the system,
right?
Familiarity with the roster and their teammates. So that, I think, helped maybe offset some of the other risk factors that they took into consideration.
Yeah, but if you bring a guy in back in April, he should have time through OTAs to learn the system and learn the players and learn the organization.
True, but I think it makes it a little bit easier if you bring in a guy after OTAs and minicamp are over, which they did for a few players, and they had to all of a sudden reacclimate themselves to the system.
201-939-4513. Roldy's at Bayshore. Roldy, what's up?
Good morning, John and Lance. I hope you guys had a good holiday.
We
Same
did.
To you, Roldy.
Couple of things. You know, during the off season, Jerry Reese has always mentioned that, you know, go with the best player, you know. I mean, I feel like we have so many needs and so many different positions that I feel like, you know, we can't afford to just go with, you know, the best player. I mean, in your opinion, I mean, do you go with the best player or do you go with, you know, a couple of positions that you need, you know, the most out of? I mean, do you go with the best player or you go the other way?
Well, I think you have to do a combination of both. You can't overlook a talent if he can help improve your roster, and you don't want to reach for a player. So, for example, if you wind up getting into the draft and you're in the second round, let's say, and you still need an offensive lineman to round out your roster, but all of the offensive linemen that are on your board are really fifth, sixth round talent, you don't take them in the second round just because you need an offensive lineman.
Heck, even if you get there and all your offensive linemen are third round grades and you still have a first round grade on a defense end, you know what, you're going to take the defensive end, and that, despite what the needs are, in my opinion, is still the right move.
Okay. Now, another thing, I mean, we're not trading Hakeem Nicks, you know, this season. I mean, do you feel like either way we're kind of, like, screwed? I mean, if we franchise him or if we just let him walk, I mean, either way we're probably, like, screwed, right, if by keep holding on to Hakeem Nicks.
Well, if you franchise him, you're probably going to have to pay him some big bucks, and I don't really think he's at an all-time high value. And even if you traded him this season, keep in mind, how much do you think you would have received in return? I mean, his numbers have gone down tremendously, and even people have questioned his work ethic at times. So I don't know if you would have gotten a high draft pick in return for Hakeem Nicks.
And you're trading to a team that, in order to keep him, left either sign to a long-term contract or put that franchise tag on him, which is a serious monetary investment. So I'm with Lance. I don't think what they would have gotten back for Hakeem Nicks at any point this season would have been, you know, enough to simply jettison the season and give up one of your better players when you're trying to make a run.
So do you let him walk this offseason?
Listen, if that's the best option for the team and they feel they can do better at the wide receiver spot, or they could bring in two guys for the same type of money, add a little extra depth, or help add depth at another position, I think that's something they're going to weigh.
Yeah, Rolly, I'll say this. I do not believe the way this team is structured in terms of their cap situation and in terms of all their other needs, I don't think they can afford to give a wide receiver $9 to $10 million.
Especially when they didn't show up for the last 2 years. So
exactly.
I agree with you. I agree with you guys. I mean, listen, you know, I know a lot of people, you know, are saying, you know, they want the Giants to lose so they could get a higher pick.
No,
you know, I'm not one of those
that.
Type of people.
No.
I'm not one of those type of people. Yes, we started the season 0-6, but finishing up, and what are we? What, 6-3? I'm very, you know, proud of the team for showing some heart, showing some pride. Going to this last game, I really want to see a W. I want to see, you know, them come out strong and start strong. And like Tom Coughlin always, you know, preaches, is finish up strong, finish up the game. That's all I want to see is the Giants play well this last game and show up. And hope to talk to you guys soon. Thank you.
All right, Thank you, Roldy.
Thanks so much for the phone call.
That's one point of view on Hakeem Nicks, and I think we're about to get a counterpoint on Hakeem Nicks from Steve in Washington, D.C. Steve, what's going on, pal?
Hey, what's happening, guys? I wasn't even going to talk about Nicks today. I promise you that. But since y'all brought it up.
Well, Steve, that's easy to say, hard to do when it comes to you. You know that.
Listen, all I'm going to say is this. you know, I just think that as long as Kevin Gilbride and Eli are here, we need to go ahead and find a way to keep Mix here. I think we need a franchise for 1 year because I doubt we're going to get him under a decent contract where both sides are happy. The reason I say that is, number one, you know how I feel about the other player around him, and I still believe in Nick. But the most importantly is, you look at Ruben Randle, he hasn't lived up to what he thought we were going to do. But if we bring another receiver in here, say a veteran, a proven veteran, how many years is it going to take him for him to learn our system?
Well, Steve, if he's a veteran receiver that's been in the league, you would hope he can figure out the system and learn it in an offseason. A guy that's a smart player and has been in the league should be able to figure this thing out.
Look, Lewis Murphy has been in the league long enough. He played at Florida. He's been in a very complex offense.
Steve, Lewis Murphy hasn't done anything in the league. I'm talking, if you're bringing a guy that's caught 70 passes in past season that you know is a very good player, that's a lot different than bringing in Lewis Murphy, who has some speed and has had 1 year when he's caught more than 20, 30 passes. There's a big difference there, you know what I mean?
I got you, but anybody who's proven is going to cost money. So I just think that we're better off going with what we know can be successful. So, I mean, just, you know, hey, look, I understand, you know, how, you know, you made some good points. I'm not even going to deny that. But on the bigger picture, I just think that, you know, if we get somebody who's proven, an Andre Johnson, something like that, he's going to cost us anyway.
All right, well, Steve, here's the question. If Akeem Nix's camp comes to you and says, we'll sign a 5-year, $45 million contract right now, do you, Steve from Washington, D.C., the Giants general manager for a day, give him a 5-year, $45 million contract?
I'm going to tell you right now, I think we need to franchise it for 1 year till we make some other changes in the offense and see what we really got, because I still believe in the offense. I don't know. I'm just, you know, I'm one of those people who's just not sold on the scheme. I don't think we use our players, you know, to their strengths this year. And I know you guys probably still haven't brought up how many times Eli has actually thrown in the end zone. So, I mean, there's a lot of things that come to play. The offensive line has to be addressed before we start making wholesale changes. Changes need to be made in that running back position. Most importantly, that's where we really need to be focusing on, is that running back position. But, you know,
Wait a minute, Steve. I don't mean to cut you off, but think about it. If you're saying that the wide receivers are not performing at a high level because Eli Manning's off because of the offensive line and they need to address the running backs, though, can only perform at a high level depending on what the offensive line does. So you need to address, as you mentioned, the offensive line before you look at any other position on offense.
Well, I couldn't agree with you more, Lance. We definitely have to deal with that offensive line. You know, no question. You know, the other caller before wrote this, I believe, kind of stole my thunder. What I wanted to talk about today was Linval Joseph. I really hate to see us, you know, let another Giant, because he is a Giant in every sense of the word, go. I just think we need to do what we need to do to make a real honest effort to keep that guy here. I mean,
here's the problem, though. You just said you want to franchise Knicks. Now you want to make an honest effort to bring back Linval Joseph. So you're looking at dedicating $16 million to two players that you just said are not the Giants' biggest need this offseason. Financially, do the math. It doesn't work. No, you said, though, you said, but if you franchise Knicks, that's $10 million out of your cap this year. $10 million. If you give Linval Joseph a long-term contract, you're looking at probably a $7 to $8 million hit on the cap for his first year on that big contract. That's $18 million to two players that are not even of your biggest positions of need. You can't do that.
I got you. Is it possible that we could sign Knicks for, you know, $7 million a year for 4 years? Is it possible? You know, I like to see the guy stay. I mean, I don't want to franchise anybody right now if we don't have to. I really like to see us keep Giants.
Right.
I really think Nick still has something. I can't say he really has anything to prove, but he certainly has to show that he's worth the money too. Not just, you know, to the fans and everybody else. I just think he's been a down year for the offense altogether. It really stinks, you know. But you know, I don't know. I'm done with the next thing, guys, because I know people are tired of hearing me talk about it. You know, I wouldn't even get back to Linval Joseph. I mean, you know, I don't want to necessarily franchise a tackle, but, I mean, if you look at Barry Cofield, you know, and most importantly, if you look at our own defensive tackle position, these guys haven't even stayed healthy. At least he's been healthy. He's been very healthy since we signed him. You know, if you look around at, you know, other players, not only on our team, but throughout the league, and I think he's only going to get better. So, You know, I hope we do find a way to keep him out.
Well, but, Steve, you know, he's been consistent, and that's a positive for him. He's been a guy that you can rely on. Like you said, he stays healthy. He makes plays. He helps fill the gaps. But I think the Giants are going to look at it in terms of this is a position where we have a great deal of depth, and we're happy with the depth. So why pay one guy X amount of dollars if we can work in our rookies, we can work in some of the veterans who don't cost as much against the cap? I think that's how you have to look at it. You need to look at it from a business perspective more so than, well, you know, we have emotional ties to Joseph, and he's brought so much to this organization. I think it's just going to come down to unfortunately the money aspect, and that may allow the Giants to allow him to walk.
Yeah, I got you, Lance. You make a good point. You know, talk to me a little bit real quick, guys, about this running back position, because I'm, you know, I like Andre Brown. I look forward to him coming in and actually having a full season, you know, but, you know, I'm kind of disappointed in what I see, to be completely honest with you. We need somebody with some more explosiveness, more power, more speed. I just think that, and obviously somebody who we know can stay healthy. So I'm not one of those people who think we need to necessarily bring in a veteran. I just like to see us bring in a real talent at the running back position. Or, you know, somebody a little bigger than Wilson. I'm a Wilson fan. I think we should probably change our scheme more than anything to fit his skill set. But, do y'all think we're leaning towards more of a veteran, or, you know, is it possible we could go into a draft and find another running back?
Well, I think they're going to look for a veteran, and appreciate the phone call, Steve. Thanks so much for chiming in, as usual, at 201-939-4513. They'll look for a veteran running back because if Andre Brown walks, let's say, Brandon Jacobs and Peyton Hill is coming back, I would say are slim, personally, given their age, their injury history, and the fact that I think the Giants want to get a little bit younger at the position. But if you bring a rookie in, Steve, as he touched on, you know, you get back to the situation. Are you going to bring in a rookie, John, that has been asked to pass protect in college? If you bring in a rookie that has not been asked to pass protect, there's no point. That's a waste of a draft. Look at what they did with David Wilson.
I agree. Bring in I'm not saying this level, but look, the Falcons got Steven Jackson on the cheap. They didn't pay him a ton of money. Bring in a player like that, a guy that's, you know, working on his second contract, you know, doesn't have to be a top-tier running back. He can be a second-tier guy. And just bring him in here. So you have a guy that you know can do what's required of the running back position in this offense. You have to.
And there's a number of veterans that are going to be on the market. Earlier in the week, we actually threw out a few names. You have Donald Brown of the Colts, not necessarily a big bruiser. I threw out LeGarrette Blount, but he's also been plagued by injuries. So,
and fumbles.
You know, it's not necessarily a bunch of names that jump off the page, but there are options that do have a great deal of experience that the Giants maybe could bring in, and they don't have to necessarily throw a great deal of money at these
and
guys.
And maybe a guy like Mark Ingram gets cut from the Saints. That's a guy that's been talked about, could be on the free agent market. So there's a lot of different ways you can go. And on Twitter, our guy Carl Martinez, who always does a good job coming up with these very good stats, just ran down the turnover ratios from 2012 to 2013 in the NFC East.
Look at the Eagles.
Redskins plus 17 to minus 7. Eagles minus 24 to plus 10. Cowboys minus 13 to plus 10. Giants plus 14 to minus 16. And that pretty much paints the picture there, Mr. Meadow.
And notice the two teams that are competing for the NFC East title are the ones that made the jump from negative to positive. See? Turnover ratio dictates whether or not you're going to have success in the season. And the reason why the Cowboys are in the plus is because they got a great load of takeaways this season compared to what they were looking at last season. That was a big reason why. The defense hasn't been great, don't get me wrong, but if you look at the numbers, they're up there in takeaways. That's a big reason why the turnover differential looks the way it has.
201-939-4513. Let's go to Ernest in Connecticut. Ernest, what's going on?
Oh, fine. I was just listening to the callers, and I was listening to you guys. I can't believe that you guys are canceling out David Wilson after guy hadn't even played. He was at the beginning of the year, his first season. He's really still a rookie because he really didn't do anything his first year. You know, he wasn't able to play because of Bradshaw being there.
We're not canceling him out.
I think that he's a great talent. I don't think you need to look. When I look at the running back spot, I think if you bring back Tillis, you can keep Brown, but you have to make David Wilson that target.
Ernest, David Wilson's neck injury could be career-threatening.
Oh, okay. Well, that's something different now.
Well, you got to protect yourself from that perspective.
Right. I mean, look, there's no guarantee that he's going to play next year. He might play. He might not. I don't think anybody really has the answer to that question right now, which is why you want to protect yourself in case that neck injury is something that threatens his career. You have somebody behind him that you can rely on him to compliment a guy like Andre Brown. You know what I mean, Ernest?
Yes, yes, yes. Okay, you know, I heard about the injury, but I didn't really think it was that serious. Is it something like a Sterling Sharp type of injury?
Yeah, he has a very minor case or a case of spinal stenosis, which has ended the careers of Michael Irvin, Darryl Johnston, Sterling Sharp. So, yeah, this could be a situation where he's not going to be able to play. The Giants haven't made that determination yet. They're still trying to figure it out with the doctors, but it certainly is a plausible scenario the way where we stand now.
Oh, okay. All right. Yes. Yeah. Well, I understand that. You know, I can see that. But I still like Tillis. I don't think they should get rid of Tillis. I think he's a good back. I think, you know, he's a very good short yardage back. And he's also a very good blocker. And his attitude, I'm thinking, is very good for that running back position.
Well, Ernest, I think you could bring back Hillis because I don't think he's going to cost a great deal of money. But remember, if you're looking to make an impact to the running game, is Hillis going to answer that for you? That's how you have to look at it if you're the Giants. You know, you still need to bring in a guy that's going to be good enough to get 10 to 15 carries and make a difference for this running game. And I think Hillis made a difference to a certain degree this season because of all the injuries. And you're right, he has the experience of being a good pass protector, can gain some yardage in short yardage situations. But we're talking about a difference maker. That's who the Giants are looking for. And I don't know if he necessarily fits that criteria.
Well, he could help, though. I really think that he could help. I think he's a very good short yardage back. I mean, you know, I can remember the time when they couldn't make a 2-yard run or a 0.5-yard run. They were always getting stopped. But since Tillis came in, I mean, this guy can just fall forward and he can get a couple yards, you know. So, I'm kind of high on him. I would like to see him come back. I would like to see Wilson comes back, barring an injury, if he's healthy, you know. And with the offensive line, and Nix, I do believe that Nix will do better when we get a better offensive line. Because remember, Eli was a big play quarterback. Nix was a big part of that. But with the offensive line not giving him enough time to really do that stuff, I believe that if they can get a good offensive line, I think they can get back to their regular routine. And I think that things will solidify itself.
All right, Ernest, thanks for the call, buddy.
All right, thank you.
I mean, look, everything's connected, but have you seen Hakeem Nix get open enough this year? I mean, we've talked about this all year. I haven't seen the separation. And when he's had separation, Eli hasn't made good enough throws.
He's also had some drop sees this year, too.
How about that slant pattern that could have won right. the game in regulation against the Lions that he dropped? And then they threw the interception later on in that drive.
And some people have criticized him also for not continuing his routes when Eli Manning throws the ball towards him, and that's led to an interception. So I buy what Ernest is saying. You're right. The offensive line has not given Eli Manning the luxury to look down the field more often than not, and Nix is that big type of playmaker. However, some of the struggles for Hakeem Nix also fall on himself this season. Don't overlook that. And you need to take that into consideration if you're the Giants before you start throwing a great deal of money his way.
201-939-4513. Len in Columbia, Maryland. Len, what's going on, pal?
Hey, good morning, guys. How you doing?
Doing well, Len. How about yourself?
Good, good, good. Pretty good.
How was your Christmas, awesome. Len?
Very good. Very good.
Excellent.
Thanks for asking. How about you guys?
It was very good.
Good. Excellent. On and now we go forward. And hard to believe, less than 2 years ago, we were sitting in a stadium in Indianapolis getting ready to watch the Giants play the Super Bowl.
It seems like a long time ago.
Less than 2 years ago. Oh, my gosh. Oh, my gosh. Listen, if you're paying a guy as much money as we're paying Eli, taking as much of a cap hit as we're taking with Eli, it dictates what side of the ball you go with in the draft and in free agency. You got to protect your asset. I want those first three picks to be offensive guys. They got to be offensive guys, and they got to be guys, please, Jerry. Don't give me left tackles who project to right guard. don't give me guys who need a year in the weight room. Don't give me guys who need, you know, one off season with us, and they'll be a lot better football players. We need players, and we need them now.
Well, Len,
and there are players out there.
Len, you say that now, but what happens if the Giants sign two free agents who are offensive linemen? Do you still want three offensive linemen in the first three rounds?
Well, let me tell you where I am with the offensive line, if you guys can bear with it. And it's really maybe the listeners who can bear with it, because I've said this before, probably to Dottino. I don't think I've said it to you. We've had 13 guys who have been offensive linemen on our 53-man roster this year. Herman made number 13, okay, when we added him to the list. I want four of those guys back. I want Beatty for a variety of reasons. I want Pugh. I want Booth, but I don't want him starting. I want him as my swing guy inside.
That's fine.
And I want to give Mosley. I want to give Mosley another shot. Mosley's my number eight offensive lineman. I want to go out and get a veteran offensive tackle who can be my swing tackle. Look, the other nine guys, whatever you guys think or whatever the coaching staff thinks is right, I'm not paying any attention to those other nine guys. I just want those four guys. Now, that's an exaggeration, because I'm saying now that's where we got to go. We got to go offensive line. We got to go offensive, and that's where we got to go with our free agent dollars. It's on the offensive side. Protect your asset. It's Eli. We've thrown our weight behind Eli with the contract that he's got. Come on, let's protect this guy in a variety of ways, not just offensive linemen, but receivers, running backs. I mean, come on, that was a disaster. I mean,
no, Len, you're right. But, you know, here's the thing that's a little scary, though. You look at the drafts the last few years, they've really tried to do that. They drafted David Wilson in the first round. They drafted Akeem Nix in the first round. They drafted Justin Pugh in the first round. Will Beatty was a second-round pick. So they have invested. They go out and they sign David Boss. They gave him a decent amount of money. So they have invested resources in the offense. A lot of the guys just simply have either gotten hurt, gotten older, or haven't panned out.
We don't have time to talk about all of those guys, but let's talk about Pugh. And I like the player. He's going to be a Giant for 10 years.
Yeah, and
he's going to get a second.
He has had a very good rookie year.
Let's see what we have said. Let's just talk about a couple of things that we've heard and we've said about Pugh. He'd make a better offensive guard.
I don't know if that's true. He's played very well at right tackle.
I'm just saying, I don't want – he was the 19th pick in the draft, guys. And we got a guy we're talking about, he might be a better offensive guard. We're talking about a guy who wait till he gets a year in the weight room. I mean, those are the kinds of – now, look, he's a good player. He's going to be on the Giants for a long time.
Yeah, but, Len, keep in mind, it was also a draft where everyone said after the first 12 picks or so, there weren't even any players left on the board with first-round grades. So Pugh almost, in effect, is a second-round pick.
Well, can I change the subject for just
sure.
a second? Because I wanted to get to this, but let me make one point on the other. It's not about Pugh. A fine player. I'm glad he's on our team. He's going to be with us for 10 years. I want a guy who's going to step in. Listen, we're going to draft somewhere between maybe 7 and 15. Don't give me any baloney about first-round grades. 15 guys with juniors coming out? Although I don't want any juniors. I'd love to know. When they get when they start developing their list, are there any things that they absolutely won't pay any attention to?
No.
See, I don't want left tackles to right guard. If we're looking for a left tackle, draft a left tackle who's played 4 years at some major college and university, who's been ascending in terms of performance, not his sophomore year being his best year, not a guy who sat out 8 games in junior because of a bad shoulder. I want guys who have played and contributed and are ascending. I don't want any reaches, guys. I don't want weight room guys. Come on, I'd love to know what the criteria are when they develop that.
Yeah, but Len, sometimes the problem is when you get to make your selection, that type of guy you're talking about, that star at the position that he's going to play in the NFL for 4 years and is a high ceiling and is an ascending player, sometimes that player doesn't exist.
Well, hey, I'm just a fan guy.
well, Len, you know what?
I'm just a fan, but I want guys.
Well, Len, real quickly, let me just put something in perspective. Look at Tyrann Mathieu, for example, the Honey Badger. A lot of question marks coming out of college, right?
Yeah.
Had a great season before he just got hurt the other week with the Arizona Cardinals.
And he was a corner in college and went to safety.
Correct. So that's an example of sometimes you take a risk on a guy who's had a lot of question marks and actually turns out to be a very productive player. That's why you can't cancel out guys automatically because of that.
Listen, the New York Football Giants are not in a take-a-risk situation going into 2014, okay? I wouldn't have touched that defensive back. Okay, hey, the Cardinals made a good choice, but let me just show you how smart I was. I was the guy who said when Will Hill was coming back, I don't know, I don't trust this guy.
I said the same thing.
You get to the end of the season, and I'm glad this guy's on the Giants.
Yep.
Let me say something about Linville, if I may.
Sure.
I hope he's a Giant next year. I like Linville Joseph. He's a good, solid player. And you know what? I don't think he's going to be in big demand, and let me tell you why I think that. There were about 15 or 16 teams who play 4-3 defense. The others play 3-4. Linville is not a nose tackle, guys. He's not a 3-4 nose tackle. He's not a defensive end in a 3-4. So the competition is 16 teams, 32 defensive tackles out there. Linville does something very special. He's not a rush-the-passer type guy. People are not going to empty the pocketbook for Linville Joseph. He's a solid player within a defense where your other defensive tackle's getting double-teamed.
Barry Cofield got his money.
If you ask the Redskins today whether or not Barry Cofield is an ideal nose tackle, Barry took a beating. Hey, listen.
Barry Cofield's been their best defensive lineman this year. He's been very good for them.
I respect your opinion. I respect your opinion on that. I'm not so sure that that's the answer. I hold a little different view on that.
Well, but Len, if you look at their defensive ends, they've been terrible this season for the Redskins with Jenkins and Golston. So Cofield has stood out amongst a group, maybe considered mediocre, but he's done a pretty good job.
Listen, I'd like those two outside linebackers on the Giants.
Kerrigan and Arakpo are pretty good.
I'd like those two guys on the Giants on the outside there that have indeed helped Barry. I'm not knocking Barry. Look, he's a great player. He went for the money, and that's great. And the Redskins made a choice. They put him at nose tackle. They're a 3-4 team. That's not Barry's strength. He's a defensive tackle in a 4-3 defense. I think we're going to have a shot at Linville. And I think it's going to be a fair price if we believe we want him. Unless we believe, look, we need the money so much on the offensive side, and we got Big Hank, you know?
Right.
Maybe we let Linville go. But I don't think it's going to cost. It's going to be outrageous when it comes to Linville, Joseph.
I figure Linville's going to get somewhere 4 years, $22 million, $20
million,
something like that, $5 million a year. I mean, I think that's reasonable for a guy coming off of his first contract as a rookie in his prime age and, you know, being a part of a rush defense that might be one of the best in football. I think he'll probably get around $4 or $5 million a year.
Okay, listen, I know I've asked you this before.
Yeah.
And I was glad it happened right after I asked you this question. Linville made a big play in the red zone against Seattle. Huge play. Sacked Wilson on third down. Huge play. That's the kind of impact we want out of that defensive tackle. Can you name one other big impact play Linville made for us this year? I know, 6-7 tackles a game, clogging up the middle, doesn't get knocked off the block, holds his ground. Jenkins is, I mean, the guys that get that kind of money are the tackles that, I mean, McCoy in Tampa, Sue in Detroit, Richardson over there with the Jets. The guys who can penetrate and create havoc in the defensive backfield.
Yeah, but Len, Sue's going to get $9 million a year. I'm just saying Joseph's going to get 4 or 5.
Well, listen, would you sign Linville for 4? If Linville wants 4 million, I mean, I thought you guys were starting to talk like Cofield money. $35 million for 5 years, $7 million. I'm not going to pay Linville that, but I might pay Linville 4 a year.
I think you're going to have to get to 5. To be honest with you, do it. And look, I think he's worth that money, Len. I'm just not sure in the Giants situation and with the cap, with all their different needs and other spots, that you can dedicate that much money to a position where you just drafted somebody in the second round of the draft and have him sit there as a backup. I'm not sure, just based on how the salary cap is and how the roster makeup is, you can afford to do that. Not that Limbo's not worth it. I'm just not sure they're in the position where they can do it.
That's a very good point, and I think the Giants think that way because if you look at recent history, Cornelius Griffin, Barry Colfield, and here we go now with Linville, and we got a guy to fill in, plug in Big Hank at that spot, and I think he's going to be probably every bit as good a player as Linville was, you know? But, hey, those first three picks, guys, give me starters. Again, I'm frustrated. I want starters. Let me say one more thing. If you live down in this area, you live in the Washington metropolitan area, Maryland, Virginia, in D.C., there's nothing better than beating the Redskins. Come on, guys. Let's win this game on Sunday. Hey, great to talk to you fellas.
Always good, Len. Thank you.
Take care.
It was kind of fun. One of the shots I loved watching that Cowboy-Redskins game last week, after Romo threw that touchdown to DeMarco Murray, they showed the Daniel Snyder
in the press box photo. His own box, I should say.
He did not look pleased.
Well, I think any owner in his position would not look too pleased, too.
Correct. But, you know, Daniel Snyder, considering, you know, how he goes about his business, you can always have a little smile on your face when you see something like that.
That's what happens in those division rival games. They come down to the nitty-gritty. I'm just looking over some of the other defensive tackles that are going to be on the market this offseason just to see what type of competition Linval Joseph has. I would probably say Jason Hatcher is the most appealing guy that's going to be on the market.
He's on the older side, though. Hatcher's over 30. Joseph just, what, 26?
But Hatcher, I think, has a little bit more versatility, perhaps.
Better pass rusher than Joseph is.
But sometimes the better pass rushers tend to get the better money than
That's
the guys
true.
That just stop the run.
That's fair.
So he's probably going to set the tone for the market. The other guy that I threw out earlier, Henry Melton, who's a good defensive tackle for the Bears, the problem is he's coming off a torn ACL.
Right.
So that may hurt his stock. Linval Joseph, if you're looking for a guy who can stop the run, he's arguably one of the top guys out there this offseason. There's really not a great deal of names that jump off the page. So somebody may be willing to throw some money at Linval Joseph. And I know Len said, well, you know, he's not a good fit for a 3-4, and that could be true. But even the handful of teams that are looking for a defensive tackle within the 4-3 system, trust me, there's going to be a team that probably is willing to throw more than $5 million the way of Linval Joseph.
Two phone calls before we say goodbye. I believe Big Ed in Maryland has been holding the longest. What's going on, Big Ed?
What's up, guys? How you doing? I hope you had a merry, very merry Christmas.
Thank you, Big Ed. How about yourself?
I did. I mean, I'm just happy, you know.
Big Ed's always happy, though. I expect Big Ed that. I imagine Big Ed has a very big Christmas celebration.
A whole lot of mess, man. Hold up. Let's get it right. I've been going through a whole bunch of mess, man. I've been really upset. I've been really hurt, man, because my team hasn't been playing at the highest level. And not making the wins like we're supposed to. But, you know, for the most part, I am happy. You all right, Big John. You all right, Big Lance. I am happy. But I tell you, the biggest thing, two things, real quick. First, one thing. I have to give a shout-out to my guys who gave me my first tailgate and my first home game 2 weeks ago. Guys, I don't remember everybody's name, but you know who you are. Big Bill and the crew and Aaron and fellas, thank you so much for helping me have my first home tailgate game. It was fantastic.
Nice.
I get you. Definitely get with me. Second, everybody, please be quiet about the draft. You must understand something. The way football is played today is not like it was years ago. When you pick a first-round draft pick and he lasted 8-9 years, it's not likely like that now. This is a whole different kind of football we're looking at now. These guys, we draft, they barely are even top. They only have 15 players that are worth first-round draft picks. Everybody else is second, third, or seventh. Don't even waste your time. The point of the draft is to bring in the best possible person for that particular position. If we get, like we did, we got Hakeem Nicks, great wide receiver. I don't want him to go. But if the contract can't sign him, hey, you know, he might have to end somewhere else. Preferably somewhere I don't want him to personally be, which is in the division.
Yeah.
But, you know, we don't want that. The second thing, we draft players to play. But the biggest thing this coming Sunday, please make adjustments for the second half. That's why Bill Belichick is in the playoffs every single year, because he makes adjustments in the second half. When you play first half ball, it's totally different from the second half ball. Please make those certain adjustments. I felt like you did in the Detroit game. I actually watched the whole entire Detroit game from beginning to finish. I have to say, we had a few hit and misses, but we can fix them. Everything is fixable. We just have to fix it. As far as that running back position, because I've been hearing that on the call this morning, guys, listen, I would love for Peyton Hillis to come back. Peyton Hillis comes back is huge because this guy can catch the football off the backfield, run block, plus get you the extra yards. Great, great, great. You can only do what you can. GM, just find who you can. You know we need running back. You know we need wide receiver. You know we need some offensive line. Fellas, what do you think? Please fill me in.
Well, I think the positions that you just laid out are important to address come the offseason. I mean, the offensive line, we've been beating a dead horse
number
throughout
one,
the course of this week.
Number two and number three priority.
And maybe even four, five, six, seven, eight, nine, ten. You can't talk enough about the offensive line because, you know, as many of our callers have alluded to, Big Ed, it starts there. You can't bring in a big playmaker in the backfield until you address the offensive line. You can't fix Eli Manning until you address the offensive line. And you can't get the receivers to perform at a high level until you fix the offensive line. And you mentioned Peyton Hillis, and you're about the second or third caller to say that he's worth bringing back. I know a lot of people have chimed in on Twitter on that topic, too. And I'm fine with bringing back Peyton Hillis because I don't think he's going to cost a great deal of money. And I think he wants to stay. But once again, you still need to look at it. You bring back Peyton Hillis. Let's say you bring back Andre Brown. Don't you feel as if you need a new type of personality, some new energy in that backfield? Even if you address the offensive line, I still think you need somebody new.
Well, and someone that's reliable. Peyton Hillis has had injury issues before, and he's had issues holding on to the football. Tom Coughlin can't stand players that fumble, and Peyton Hillis fumbles.
I know. Well, he didn't fumble that much.
He had three fumbles in two games. He had three fumbles in three games. His first three games, he fumbled once in each one of his first three games.
He didn't necessarily lose them.
Johnny,
he jumped back on top of them, but it's still a fumble.
Come on, Johnny. He just started. He didn't begin the season with us. He brought him in mid-season.
Yeah, I know. But in his first year with the Browns, he had eight fumbles.
Two fumbles in the first game. Nah. We need some guy. You're right. We need a guy to come in and can energize, help Eli, and help himself at the same time. We need a great running back that can do that. Now, if it calls for, I personally would go for somebody. See, that's what people didn't understand about Bill. I mean, a couple of people were just saying it a minute ago about, you know, draft picks and stuff like that. What they're not understanding is they have to get acclimated from playing college ball to pro ball. And that's not as simple as it sounds because I've noticed how the playbook is like three times larger than the college playbook. So that's not as easy as it sounds. That's why the draft is the draft. But the biggest thing is, like I was saying about a couple of weeks ago, undraft. Undraft. Get me a whole bunch of undraft players like out of Mount Union and with that John Carroll and little schools like that. Find those quality, solid players that can hold their position and bring them in. You don't have to draft them. You just have to invite them because you got more players like that than you do coming out the draft. Right?
Well, but there's still a risk factor in that situation, Big Ed, and appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for joining in this morning. You want to at least get someone established. I think if they're going to go the route of bringing in a new player in the backfield, I would think it would come via free agency more so than the draft or an undrafted guy.
You want someone that can step in and
correct.
You can rely on right away. You know, of course, we said this last offseason, too, and it didn't happen.
Well,
so.
they brought in Michael Cox via the seventh round, and, you know, I mean, he hasn't necessarily stood out amongst the group. And they have drafted guys in the past that have panned out. Ahmad Bradshaw, for example, is a good guy that really made the transition well and wasn't necessarily a rah-rah guy coming into the NFL, knew how to pass protect, took advantage of his opportunities, and flourished in this system. But I don't know if you're going to find that again, and I don't know if that's the route you want to go. I think you need to go the route of bringing in an established running back, a guy that's got credibility, a guy that's got a track record, a guy that can stay healthy, and a guy that wants to pass protect. And when you can check off all of those things, then you offer him some money. Until you find that, I think they still need to explore their options.
201-939-4513. Final call. The program is Mike down in Dallas. Mike, good morning.
Good morning, guys. How you guys doing?
Doing well, Mike. How about yourself?
I'm hanging in there. Listen, I've been hearing all these guys talking about draft linemen. You can't draft linemen at this point. Eli's getting older. You know, there's no such thing as a guaranteed great offensive linemen.
No, there isn't. There isn't, but you can often get a pretty good interior lineman if you draft him in the first or second round. Jake Long this year, for example, is a good Kyle Long, excuse me. The first round pick by the Bears is a good example of that. The Frederick kid the Cowboys took to play center has been a very good center for him this year. And even Justin Pugh has been a very good tackle. So you can get offensive linemen early in drafts, and they can, I think, even more so than a lot of other positions, quite frankly, help right away. So I don't think that's necessarily a wait and see, but I agree whoever they draft, and Mike, I'm sorry for cutting you off, but I think whoever they draft, you need to be able to get production from right away. And I agree with Lynn on that. You can't draft any projects early. You need guys that have to be able to come in, step in, and play right away.
But the only point I'm making is I'd rather get a guy who's established in the NFL. There's no wait time. Hey, for every guy you say, you know, works out, Pugh, I thought worked out, Fredericks works out. You know, I hear about him all the time being down in Dallas like I am. But, you know, for every guy like that, you also got a Robert Gallery, someone who just, like, drafted fourth, just completely bombed in the NFL. There's no such thing as a great, you know, a guaranteed draft pick.
And that's true. No question about it.
And so, you know, that's all I'm saying. I want someone who's been established, who's been in this league, who's, you know, dominated someone before. I'd rather see, you know, two guys like that get, you know, as opposed to, you know, let's draft someone and see what happens. Because there's no guarantees in the draft.
Well, and Mike, I don't mean to cut you off, they have a better track record, the Giants, of bringing in free agents, which you've been touching on. Sean O'Hara, Kareem McKenzie, even Sean Locklear, who was a swing tackle, have made bigger impacts than some of the draft picks that they've brought in over the last few years.
Absolutely. And one of the main things I think we need to address through free agency is a tight end. Somebody who can block. You know, you have all these guys coming in, Myers and to me, you know, losing Marcellus Bennett was a huge blow to us. That's just, you know, that hurt us more than I think any offseason loss. You know, I just felt like he brought so much. He was another guard out there or another tackle out there that can block and catch the ball. So I just want to make the point, you know, and to the last caller about Tom Coughlin not making adjustments, he's one of the best second-half coaches there is. You look at his whole career, I can't count how many games we've been down at halftime and came out and, you know, to kill someone in the second half. So that's all I really want to say. You know, running backs are kind of a dime a dozen. You can always find somebody, you know, later in the draft, middle of the draft. Just find someone well-rounded. He doesn't have to be a burner. He doesn't have to be a monster. Just someone that's consistent. So that's all I really want to say. I'll hang up, and you guys tell me what you guys think.
All right, Mike, and appreciate the phone call. And I agree with Mike to a certain degree that
good
you
call.
Can bring in a running back, and as long as he fits the system, he can thrive. You take, for example, Mike Shanahan. You know, you can criticize him as a head coach, but he's done fairly well when you look at his days in Denver and even in Washington. Alfred Morris was a sixth-round pick. And Alfred Morris is now one of the top running backs in the NFL. But the Giants are not that type of system, John, where you just bring in a running back and you say, run. You know, there's some decisions and routes that you have to make. You have to pass protect.
Though Alfred Morris is not their third down guy. They will take him out in passing situations. They don't ask him to pass protect in Washington as much as the Giants would, I don't think.
And that's another reason why I think Morris has had a success rate there, because of the responsibilities in the system. So the Giants don't have a system that's very similar to Washington and what Shanahan ran in Denver. Therefore, I don't know if that track record holds true where you just throw in a running back because you think he's got some potential and he's going to thrive here. You need to do your homework more so here than in some other types of situations.
You know, I guess this is the product of being 6-9. We've barely talked about the game during the show. No one's even called up about it. It's amazing.
Yeah, you don't get too many questions about what the Giants need to do to win the battle at the line of scrimmage type of thing.
Not really.
Well, we'll have that discussion on Big Blue Hits, I'm sure.
Give me your one key to the game for the Giants to beat Washington on Sunday.
Well, I think they need to contain Alfred Morris like they did in the first matchup, John. He only had 11 carries or 26 yards. Is a team that leans heavily on Morris. Why? Because it sets up play action. And Kirk Cousins is the type of guy that's going to look to air it out. The second key, I would say, but it's more based off of the run, is just make sure you're aware of where Pierre Garçon is, because he's come alive as of late, and he's really been able to move the chains. I thought they did a real good job on him in the first matchup. And remember, Will Hill had the strip late in the game to seal the contest. But priority number one, contain Alfred Morris, because if you don't contain Alfred Morris, then that's where Garçon can really set the tone.
Yeah, and as good as Kirk Cousins has been this year, he has turned the football over. He's fumbled it a bit. He's thrown some picks. So I think you can create some turnovers. If you're the Giants defense, you can get some turnovers in this game. We talked about all the miscellaneous return touchdowns that the Redskins have allowed this year. I think the Giants might be able to take advantage of that. Maybe a special teams touchdown for the first time all year. That'd be
both
nice.
Of these special teams units are nothing to write home about, John. That might be wishful thinking.
You know what? The Redskins, I might be the worst in the league, though. They have one of the worst special teams units in the league. They're really, really bad.
In fairness, though, the Giants haven't been too good themselves.
Not in the return game. Certainly not. I can't disagree with that at all. So maybe the Giants can make something happen there. Obviously, you're right. Stop the run. Get in the third and long. Create some turnovers. Maybe get after Cousins a little bit. You know, the Redskins' offensive line, as we mentioned, has played better since Cousins has been quarterback. He does a better job getting the ball out pretty fast. But, look, I think all those things put together, the Giants should have every chance to win this game, but I expect it to be a very close one-score game in the fourth quarter.
Well, I think it's going to be an emotional game for the Redskins, too. That's why I would assume it's going to be a battle royale down the stretch, because remember, this could be the last game for Shanahan. I'm sure some guys want to play hard for him.
And London Fletcher.
Correct, London Fletcher, who's had that tremendous streak. He's going to hang up the jersey after this season. There's a lot of reasons why Washington, I think, is going to come to play, and they're not going to necessarily mail it in.
No, I agree. They're not going to roll over here. I mean, maybe if the Giants get out to a 2-3 score lead, I could see the Redskins packing it a little bit, but I just don't see it happening.
And they've been fairly competitive lately. They've played games where they've lost by 1 point over the last 2 weeks, John. So, you know, they've really given Atlanta and Dallas a hard time. I expect that trend to continue because at the end of the day, they've got a guy under center who at least is trying to sell himself as a starter in this league, and that's Kirk Cousins. So that factor alone makes them dangerous.
All right, before we say goodbye, I don't want to go through all the picks like we did last week, but let's talk about a couple of the very important games this week that I think are kind of interesting. Aaron Rodgers playing for the Packers, going up against the Chicago Bears, and I find it hard to believe how the Bears are winning this football game, Lance. I really do. The Bears at home, I understand that, but they have not impressed me this year. They're coming off a game where they got walloped by Philadelphia. I think Aaron Rodgers and that Packers passing game has an absolute field day, depending on weather conditions.
Well, to be honest with you, if you want to attack the Chicago Bears, John, I would do it more so on the ground than through the air. They're terrible. They're 32nd in the league.
That's a great point. I guess Eddie Lacy having a monster game.
Though Eddie Lacy's dealing with an ankle injury, so I don't know how effective he'll be. Aaron Rodgers, you're right, adds a whole new dimension to this game. But I've been impressed with the Chicago offense, John. I think that they've really come a long way. They've got probably one of the biggest tandems in the receiving corps in the NFL. Martellus Bennett's added a new dimension. It's been a little Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde.
And
that's been the problem.
And I'm a supporter of his, but the offense hasn't looked as good since Jay Cutler's been back. Hasn't. Be fair.
They had a good second half against the Cleveland Browns. They did.
They were fine.
They put up 38 points against the Browns.
That's
and they didn't necessarily
point.
Do that because of their defense.
That's a fair point.
He needed time to adjust. He didn't look good against Philly, but keep this in mind. Chicago got down so early, John, they were playing catch-up, and you take away some of your game plan.
I agree. You almost have to throw that one out. But all I'm saying is that the Bears' defense is so poor, I just have trouble thinking that they're going to be able to score with the Packers. In that
momentum
game.
Is in the corner of Green Bay, John.
Very true. The other big game, obviously, and I'm sure NBC wishes they took Chicago-Green Bay instead of this game. That's Dallas and Philadelphia. It's looking less and less likely that Tony Romo is going to play in this game, trying to play through a herniated disc. I'm sure he'd play through it if they let him. I'm not sure if the doctors are going to clear him. Romo's played with a punctured lung and fractured ribs. I think he'll try to play with a back injury as well. But my guess is the doctors don't clear him, and that means it's Kyle Orton time, and people criticize Jerry Jones for paying a backup quarterback $2.5-3 million a year. Well, here it is. This is exactly why you do it. And I'm going to take a look at this game the same way I take a look at the Bear-Packer game. I just have no confidence in this Cowboy defense to slow down the Eagles offense. Now, I know they did it earlier in the year. In my opinion, Nick Foles was not healthy for that game, even though he played, however. I just don't think the Dallas defense will do enough to hold Philadelphia back to give their backup quarterback the opportunity to win the football game. I think Dallas can put up 21, 24 points in this game. I just think they're going to give up 35.
Dallas only has a chance in this game if they determine that it's smart to run the football.
That's a great
point. That's what this game comes down to.
Great point. And run it well. They have to run it well.
But when DeMarco Murray gets 20 carries or more, John, they're virtually unbeaten. So run the football. You want to win? Run the football. You want to put the game in the hands of Kyle Orton, you're handing Philadelphia the division. That's how I see this game playing.
Well, here's the issue, though. What happens if you get down early because your defense can't stop anybody? What if the Eagles start the game with the ball, they score a touchdown, you try to run the ball, you don't do it on your first series, you punt, bam, you're down 14-0 if the Eagles score in the next spot. Then you're finished.
But
you're finished.
I still think you run the football, John. I'll tell you why. Do you trust that defense?
No.
So therefore, why do you want to put him on the field?
But if you can't run it successfully and you're punting the ball in your first two possessions,
you can't stick with it. That's my point.
If you're down a score, you're down 10 points.
I'm talking 14. What have you down 14-0 4 minutes ago in the first quarter?
I still think you can run the football under those circumstances.
It puts you in a bind.
It does, but I would not abandon the run because that's playing right into the hands of Philadelphia. They want you to panic.
No,
they want you to become one-dimensional.
But the defense is so poor. And we talked about this with the Giants earlier in the year when people complained that they couldn't run the ball, couldn't run the ball, couldn't run the ball. It's because the defense couldn't stop anybody, and they were getting down, and they had to throw it. And that's how I kind of see that game playing out. Very similar to what happened with Dallas against the Bears a few weeks ago when they ran the ball so well earlier in that game. But the Bears ended up just scoring every possession, and they couldn't stick with it just because of scoring time.
And Chicago also had to abandon the run last week, too, getting down early.
Right, and that's what I worry about in terms of that game. Any other big games here you want to mention real quick? Miami Jets?
Well, the only other big games revolve around those AFC wildcard situations.
Baltimore-Cincinnati?
I think Cincinnati's going to win that game. They're unbeaten at home, and I don't like how Baltimore's looked with an unhealthy Joe Flacco and a banged-up O-line.
Yeah, he's dealing with that knee injury. I didn't realize the Bengals were 7-0 at home this
year.
Correct.
Huh? Unbeaten. Played very good football at home, and that's why I like their chances if they can get that first-round home matchup, which they will because they have an AFC North Division title under their belt. This is a team that can get hot. This is my bold prediction for this weekend, John. San Diego, I think, is going to get the sixth spot, and they have a very good chance of getting to the Super Bowl.
Now, what do the Chargers need to do to get into the playoffs?
They need everybody
here to
lose.
So they need to win,
but come on.
And they need Miami, Baltimore.
Just Miami and Baltimore.
Not Pittsburgh's done.
No, Pittsburgh's behind them. No, Pittsburgh's alive. Pittsburgh needs the San Diego to lose, too.
Two, okay.
But see, Kansas City has nothing to play for.
Right.
So I like the Chargers' chances. And Andy Reid said he's probably going to rest the majority of his starters.
And that game's in San Diego, too, which you have to like.
Baltimore, I see, is losing to Cincy. Right. I think it works heavily in favor. Jets-Dolphins is the one game. Who knows what's going to happen? But
well, after Miami had a no-show last week, who knows how they're going to play?
Correct. The only thing is, if you're San Diego, do you like your chances in the hands of Geno Smith trying to get you in the playoffs?
That is a risky
Who would have thought the Chargers season coming down to Geno Smith?
So I'll tell you what, the Steelers actually have a pretty decent chance to make it, too. The Steelers and Chargers are actually in okay shape.
And I'm telling you, the team that gets in that sixth spot, assuming it's not Miami or Baltimore, John, watch out. That could be the next Giants, Packers,
Let's
Steelers,
see.
Or Ravens type
That'll
of team.
Be the second wild card team after Kansas City. So they would play the third best division winner, which would probably end up being the...
Well, right now it would be the Bengals.
The Bengals. Yeah, they could win that game. Yeah, that's a good point. So the second bye right now would still be New England?
Yeah, New England and Denver are lined up to have the byes. If New England loses and Cincy wins, Cincy moves up to the second.
There you go. See, you're a very good job with all this stuff.
That's
not when you have a national show. You have
there
to be on top of all this stuff.
Wow, a pat on the back from John Schwab.
I've been too busy eating Christmas food to have all this stuff memorized, which is a bad job out of me. I'll fully admit it.
We'll be able to digest this on Monday a lot more. It's very complex and convoluted, these playoff situations.
NFC is much simpler.
However, there's still some movement that could happen.
Well, remember, seeding, I know.
San Francisco could win the NFC West and win the number one overall seed.
Well, and the Panthers and Saints can still flop
Correct.
A little bit, too.
And the Saints could also miss the playoffs, too.
That's true.
It's crazy.
You love it.
I do.
You're giddy.
I'm looking forward to it. No, there's a lot of good matchups this weekend. Even though the Giants are not necessarily in it, there's a lot to look forward to, I think, this
weekend. So speaking of which, the Win and Urine game, which is a national game, are we still getting together Sunday night to watch Eagles-Cowboys?
Well, that is the plan, absolutely.
Excellent. We get
that
to see Lance's new apartment.
Nothing's changed.
Listeners, I'm going to show up with a full report on Lance Meadows' dwelling on Monday morning. I am excited about this.
Yeah. No change in the plan.
Excellent.
We're lined up for Sunday evening. Assuming we get out of here in a decent time.
Well, we should.
You know, we get an overtime game between the Redskins and the Giants. Who knows?
We'll be back for kickoff.
2 hour post game.
We'll be out of here.
Okay.
Now, here's the question. What are you planning for, like, food and refreshments?
Well, I was probably going to pick something up and just bring it in.
We're going to
order
something?
You think I'm cooking for you?
No, I don't want you to cook. I just, you know, do you have any ideas for, like, what you want to order?
Well, we can pick up something.
A pizza? Maybe.
Yeah.
Do you have any places around your building that you like?
I haven't tried out much. Remember, I haven't been there very long.
You've been there for a couple months. You've been eating?
I have been eating. I make my own food.
No, you don't.
I do, absolutely.
You cook?
You can check my fridge when
you
come.
What do you cook?
I cook a variety of things.
Give me an example. What's the Lance Meadows specialty?
Well, I cook pasta, sandwiches I make,
a variety
of different things.
Now, is this like the ready-made microwave pasta, or you actually boil the water and you get the pasta and you put it in?
Yeah, you do a little of that.
Nice.
Absolutely. Yes.
Look at you. You're much more industrious than I thought.
Well, I mean, I stock up on food. Listen, you want to roll out of bed sometimes. You want to be able to make yourself something. You can't necessarily go down and buy something all the time.
I'm trying to give you some credit here. Why are you being defensive?
Okay, I'm not being defensive, but I mean, you make it sound like, you know, I'm going out every single evening.
I don't know what you're – that's why I asked. I didn't know what
you
were doing.
Between the work schedule, you don't have that type of flexibility.
No, I understand.
You should know that.
No, but it's very tempting when you're in Manhattan. Every place delivers. The food's very good. It's very tempting to often go out, which can get a little pricey.
Yes, but it also keeps you energized when you make your own food, too. Gives you another hobby.
Wow, Lance, the little amateur cook. Who would have guessed? That
well,
is
don't,
that is
don't
new
expect me to roll out, you know, the red carpet treatment for you if those are the expectations that you're getting.
You're working on Sundays. Okay. I don't expect that. But one of these days, I'm going to want to come by and get a nice home-cooked Lance Middle meal.
Yes. If I had more time, I'd be more than willing to make some food.
Maybe it can be a feature on Giants.com.
It could, eh?
Cooking with Meadow.
In the off-season, we need some material, so.
Cooking in the Meadow, perhaps.
There we go. Oh, boy.
How
wow,
like
you're
that?
Really willing to take one out of Bob and Carl's.
I'm sure Carl Banks and Papa want to come by and partake.
Absolutely.
Maybe you could, like, teach one of the Giant players how to cook.
It could be a new segment in the offseason. I like it.
I think we're closing in on a potential feature here.
There's a big one. He's put the producer's hat on, Giants fans. Watch out. We may never hear the end of this one.
I'm not sure I can let you wear that purple shirt while you're cooking, though.
Well, we want to protect the shirt. We don't need to ruin the quality of the clothing here.
All right, Lance.
Showcasing on Big Blue Hits, by the way. A little tease.
Yeah, 4 o'clock today on Giants.com. Make sure you check it out. Excellent segue. Lance and I will break down the game, but also get into a lot of off-season stuff as well. First two blocks will be on the Giants and the Redskins game, and the last half of the show will be on a lot of the free agent stuff, offense and defense.
See, I told you I had the producer's hat on.
The producer's
hat. When you're talking blocks to the public, you know you're thinking producer.
The producer hat's always on, Lance Metal.
Well, it was a good program.
It's not a job. It's a life.
Yes. Well said. Sure, you have that sign somewhere taped up in the office.
I think I should make that sign. Excellent job, everybody. Good job on Twitter. Good job on the phones. Mr. Meadow will see you at 4 o'clock on Giants.com. Everybody have a great weekend. Have a good one.